10:15. Thank you everybody for attending. I'll start with an acknowledgement of country. I'd like to acknowledge the Wiradjuri people who are the traditional custodians of the land. I'd also like to pay respect to their people, both past and present, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal Australians who are present or may be listening to our recording, which I assume is happening. Yes, thank you. And on that recording of the meeting statement is in accordance with CTW's Code of Meeting Practice. This meeting will be audio recorded and will be uploaded to Council's website within 2 weeks after the meeting. The audio recording will allow members of the public to listen to the proceedings of the Council meetings. The objective of this service is to eliminate geographic and other access barriers for the community wishing to learn more about Council's decision-making processes. By speaking at the Council meeting, you agree to be audio recorded. Please ensure that if and when you speak at this Council meeting, that you ensure that you are respectful to others and use appropriate language at all times. I don't need to tell people that, do I? Whilst Council will make every effort to ensure that audio recordings are available, it takes no responsibility for and cannot be held liable for technical issues beyond its control. Moving on, recordings will be made of all Council meetings, excluding confidential items, and we do have some that later on in this meeting, and published within 2 weeks after the meeting. For a copy of the official public record, please refer to Council's Business Papers and Minutes page on Council's website. Council does not accept any responsibility for any verbal comments made during Council meetings which may be inaccurate, incorrect, defamatory or contrary to law, and does not warrant or represent that the materials or statements made during the meeting are complete, reliable, accurate or free from error. The audio recording is primarily set up to capture the proceedings of the Council meeting, and members of the public attending the Council meeting need to be aware that they may be recorded as part of the proceedings. Item 4, apologies and applications for leave of absence by members. We have a full house today, so there are no apologies. Item 5, confirmation of minutes from previous meetings. Do I have a mover?
Yep.
Councillor Pallett and Councillor Best. Thank you. Are there any matters of right? Oh, actually, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
It's carried. Item 6, matters arising from the previous meeting. Does anyone have any?
Just a question, the three policies they all went through? Yep. Were adopted?
No submissions.
Yep. No submissions. Just adopted them as was.
Yep.
So yep. They've been adopted, yeah. Yep. As per the resolution from the last meeting?
Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Any other?
If I can, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. through you, the item 12.1, item 6 of that recommendation, you'll councils will see that there's a separate report in this business paper to address that. Mm-hmm. And also item 12.2, the traineeships, just to note that we'll be advertising that very shortly. So that's progressive.
Thank you. Any further comment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on. Disclosures of interests. Does anyone have any interest to disclose?
Nothing to declare.
Okay, I'll move on. Public forum. We appear to have no member of the public in the room, so we have no public forum. There is no chairperson's minutes. Council representation. Would anyone like to declare anything that they've attended on behalf of CTW?
No, nothing.
Other than the workshop that you all attended and I didn't.
And the ARIC meeting, I went in place of Craig.
Okay, could that be recorded? Yep. I've attended a meeting of the Water Advocacy Group with the JR, which I can't remember the date, it was a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago. I think that's about it. In terms of meetings, because of course Our last meeting here was December, and we've had all of Christmas, New Year, and the rest of January in the meantime. So there hasn't been, I mean, there's been happening, a lot's happening in the background, but not much in the way of meetings. Thanks, everyone. Item 11, notices of motion.
None.
There are no notices of motion. Okay, we're up to item 12, reports of staff. And 12.1 is the, I'll just find it, everything. It's on page 10. Okay, this is the Safe and Secure Water Program Stream 2 Strategic Funding. The recommendation here is that Council note the report and approve development of the strategic projects as outlined in the Stage 1 of the Safe and Secure Water Program, and that's SSWP 216 funding D. Can I have a move, please? Councillor Newstead, seconder. Councillor Goswich, thank you. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to probably recap on what happened with the previous meeting and the recommendation to progress in principle with that, I've since had discussions with DQ as to how we can structure the deed to enable us to go out and undertake the work to scope up the projects. And the projects are listed in the report, the 9 projects. The intention is to scope up the projects and seek quotations to undertake the work if it's going to be done outside. And then we can report back to Council on the cost to go to deliver those projects. If Council wish to proceed at that point to fund the additional, then we can proceed to a Stage 2 of the funding deed, in which the Safe and Secure will fund 50% of delivering the projects. So that was a way in which we could split up the project to do the first step to understand how much will it all cost, and then we can make a decision as to whether we proceed or not, or we might revise the scope and select a few or
to prioritise.
Potentially, yeah. So that was the, I guess, the nuts and bolts of how it progressed. But I say the Safe and Secure team have been very helpful in trying to be flexible with that. So anyway, and the report is as it is tabled, and I'm happy to take on questions.
Any questions, Councillor?
Just through the chair, just a question on the budget for it. So you've got the maximum amount that DCEDW will contribute is 27. Is that for the first part of the project?
Yes, so this is...
So they're actually... so they're happy to do 27,000 for the first section, and then, like you said, we're going to go back to them and ask for 50% funding for the actual works itself.
Yeah, we've got to match the 27.
Yeah. But you're only estimating it's going to cost 26,000 to do the actual scoping. Mm-hmm. So,
half of that.
Yeah, 30,000 from the department and 30,000 from us should actually scope the whole project out.
Yep. And get quotes.
Get quotes back for them. Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, that was the whole lot of projects. We're a bit light on, I'm thinking.
Yes.
I think, just want to clarify.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you.
So 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Any further comment?
No.
No, I think this is something we do. This is a no-brainer, because if we're getting a lot of these plans here, things that we would probably be doing anyway. Or wanting to do, and if we're going to get 50% subsidisation from the government, that's brilliant. That's fantastic. So it's a bit of an opening for me. Anyway, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Let's go. Thank you. Thank you, General Manager. Item 12.2, policy reviews. There are 3 there to consider: the secondary employment policy, the concealed leaks policy, and the water charges debt recovery policy. The recommendation is that 1, we note the report; 2, we endorse the draft secondary employment policy, concealed leaks policy, and water charges debt recovery policy, and place on public display for a period of 28 days. And thirdly, if no submissions are received during the that display period, that public display period, the policy be adopted. Do I have a mover? Councillor Pilate and Councillor Boswich. Thank you. General Manager, would you like to speak to this?
I might ask the
Finance Chairman, I'm happy to speak to this one.
Yeah.
As councillors would be aware, we're required over 12 months from the day of the election to review all our policies. Basically, these policies, the secondary employment policy hasn't been substantially changed since 2016, so we've just basically redrafted that policy. It's very similar. It revolves around Section 353 of the Local Government Act, which deals with secondary employment and approval to undertake secondary employment. It's mainly in there to uncover if there's any conflicts of interest that may arise for a person undertaking secondary employment while they're working for council. We intend to basically do a review of secondary employment across council once this policy is adopted. And we'll do that and we'll see if there's any issues there that comes to the attention of the general manager. In most cases, there isn't, but we'll do that and then we'll try and do it on a regular basis, an annual basis, from there on to do that. Concealed leaks policy and the debt recovery policy, water charge debt recovery policy, are basically the same policies that we had with the previous council. The concealed leaks policy is basically it's a concession that we will give people that are in residential premises, and it outlines the conditions in which we would grant that. We get an application form done and we assess those applications. They tend to come in fits and bursts. Sometimes you don't get any for a period, and then all of a sudden you'll get a number to come in. And sometimes they're a little bit tricky. They've got a few twists and nuances with them that you have to make a call on. But the policies work pretty well. The main key to the policy is that we, Central Tablelands Water, only offers that concession to residential connections, not to any non-residential connection. It doesn't apply. The water charges debt recovery policy is basically how we go about recovering our debts and how we do have an agent that we use. We do send out reminders. We encourage people, if they've got an issue, to come and talk to us, and we're happy to look at payment arrangements. And we do that on a fairly consistent basis. So we do that. Basically, that policy is there unchanged from the previous one. So we're basically endorsing two policies that we already have. You could argue that we don't have to put them on public display, but given the importance of the policies and the interaction that people may have with council, I think it's important that we put them out there and give people an opportunity if they've got any queries to or issues to raise.
Mm-hmm. Any comments? Any questions?
Just a comment, just to say, you know, I think it's very important to update and to keep an eye on these policies to make sure we are up there, you know what we're doing.
Yeah, we've got a few for you, Mr. Chair, to do. So we'll try and get a few up to each council meeting. So by the time the 12 months comes around in October, or actually in September, we've got most of the policies covered.
Mm-hmm. I've just got one question. Have we seen an increase with the cost of living pressure with people not paying their
We have a few. Our debt recovery percentage has been around the 7.5% for about 3 years. So we haven't seen a real sort of spike with it. When COVID was on, the Office of Local Government came in and said that you wouldn't take any recovery action for a period, I think it was 6 months, and you didn't charge any interest.
Yep.
So the debts did build up a bit, but we do have some hard ones as well.
Yep.
That we're trying to deal with. We try at every stage to communicate with the debtor and try and settle these things. Sometimes you just can't resolve the issue. And you have to.
What's 7% of the average, like in other councils?
Well, they say that for a rural council, anything under 10 is not too bad. Some councils come in pretty low, but there's some that are over 10, 12-13. And when you get to over 10, it starts to hurt you from a cash point of view because you're carrying too much money.
Yeah.
But we do have some hard ones that we're working on. We are looking at possibly going to a sale of land. We're talking to our constituent councils and we're negotiating through our debt collection agent, who also does work for our constituents, Recuper. So we're looking at possibly going for a sale of land maybe this year. It'd be something I'd like to sort of see done before I finish up, if I can.
Yeah.
And that's for the ones that have been outstanding for more than 5 years. and you've tried every possible means to try and resolve it, you can't resolve it. A lot of times when you, once council resolves to go to a sale of land, you do find that those debts do sometimes get settled pretty quickly before they get to an actual sale. But I think that's something we're going to have to do to try and clean up some of the more recalcitrant ones that we have, or the difficult ones that we have.
Is it businesses or is it residential?
Oh, some are rural, some are residential. We've got some pretty big residential ones that sort of build up over COVID, and you know, that we haven't been able to get them back under control. Some people have said that sometimes people say that they'll undertake an arrangement and they agree on it. They do a couple of payments and then you're back. They don't follow the arrangement and you're back starting again.
So how often does that result in their water being shut off, or does that not happen?
We haven't done a lot of restrictions lately. Our water meter reader has been off from workers' comp and whatever, and we really haven't had the resources to do a lot of restrictions. So we've tried to do it through alternate means, but that's something we could look at possibly doing more restrictions
at what point would you go and shut the water off, and how do you do that? Like, there's only a tap, how do you go?
You've got to go through a formal notification process. You've got to advise them, you've got to give them an offer and say, well, you know, we expect you to settle the account in full or come to some arrangement, or we will restrict. And there's generally 3 days. I think we give them 3 days to get back to us. And then if they don't get back to us in 3 days, we go out and we actually put a restrictor on them.
That doesn't stop the water completely.
No. 200 mils a minute. That's about 0.2 of a litre, yes, yeah. 200 mils, that's correct. So it restricts it quite substantially. You've just got to be careful if you've got occupied premises, actually cutting water off, because there's public health considerations that you've got to give people an opportunity to use water.
At some point. Must get to that point
there. Yeah, hopefully you can resolve it or come to an arrangement that people are going to keep prior to then. You do get some that they just use the water account as a mean of funding their business, I suppose.
But I know when I worked for Essential Energy, we had a few people that wouldn't pay their bills, and we'd go and pull their fuses on their board, but then they put wire in the field. Oh. We had to disconnect them up the pole, and they just weren't
okay,
so we disconnected
them. Yep. No, it's difficult, and you don't want to be too harsh, and you don't want to cause unfair stress and anxiety for people, but there does come a point where people have got to help themselves and prioritise it as well. Usually, if they're not paying water, they're not paying their rates and and their constituent count. Not all the time, but most of the time. So that's why we try and talk to the constituents, and so we can do a sale of land, and then we can do an arrangement between the two councils in proportion to the debts, cover our proportion of the costs and so on, and carry out a sale. And that's something
which we did do 5 years ago, I think.
And once it gets to, if the debt's over 5 years, we can. If the debts are under 5 years, unfortunately, we're a little bit.
I'm pretty sure we did CTW did one.
We did. Yeah. We did with Grenfell. Yeah, we've sort of. We are approaching you again to just see if there's any there that we can work on together and try and work through. That's a pretty drastic action to take, and it does cost a lot in terms of time and resources to get it organised. The agents that we use do help a lot with making sure we get the appropriate documentation, resolutions, advertisements. There's a process, and you've got to actually make sure you follow that strict process. But that's a last resort, though.
Just following on from that, then, just with the operational side of this policy, then who makes the final decision on restricting? Is that, I couldn't pick it up in the policy?
Oh, well, that would be done in conjunction. It'd be a recommendation from probably myself to the general manager and to the water network manager as well. Yep. So it'd be a joint decision to do that. We wouldn't take that lightly.
No, as well. It's not actually specified in there
who actually makes the decision. Probably the general manager in the end make that decision.
Yeah, okay.
And if I can, Mr. Chair, just add one last comment to identify that the policy is important to try and give us rules to work with. One of the difficulties we face, which Peter's touched on, is that there is such a variety of customers that we have, and some of them are recalcitrant and just choosing not to do it. Others have, on the other end, you know, they're really in real hardship. Some of them have mental illness issues. So we're trying to create a policy, I suppose, that gives the organisation a bit of
flexibility,
direction, but we do try to be as flexible as we can, as Peter has indicated. So that it's just important to note that there are some challenges when we do get these come through. Everyone is treated on its own merit, and we make the assessment based on the information at hand. We get information from the rates department, what's happened in the past. So we try to understand the full history and the facts prior to making that call. But it is a difficult one that we have.
It's a very difficult area, because you could get people on the phone that are emotional and that as well. Or some people are just in denial about the situation. So it can be difficult for your customer service team and your frontline staff as well. So we've got to be careful how we... And we try and be very fair, and I think we are. It's just that small proportion of those difficult ones that have got fairly significant debts, and they have been fairly passive in trying to reduce that or make it a priority. But as far as we can, we'll work with people, and if we can get an arrangement where we're getting the current debt down and we're also covering future charges, because that's the other thing, taking into account the level of future charges when you're working out an arrangement, so that you make sure they're paying enough to actually cover that and to cover the new charge, so they're not going backwards. But generally, most people are pretty sort of cooperative, and they're happy to sort of work through it. And we always encourage people to talk to us early, so we can help you.
Well, I think you're pretty fair.
We try to be, Council Nash, yeah, we try to be.
There are lot more agencies now, given our economic climate, that are supporting people that are in hardship. So people can be referred to those agencies.
You can do.
And electricity is now being paid in some of those instances, and phone cards and things like that to give relief, so that then they can pay their water bill or their other things, the other income they've got left. So there is more of that there, so people need to be reaching out to those support networks and financial management help with that.
And through our early intervention with our agent, we do sometimes, there are those non-government bodies that do help in that regard, and we're happy to work with them, and we do work with them. And sometimes people get referred to financial counsellor or something to help them with their financial management and their planning. We try and do that when we can,
which is great.
Well, thank you, everyone. It's a great discussion. Look, I'll put that motion. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Item 12.3 on page 40 is the QBR, quarterly budget review statements for 31st of December 2024. Recommendation is that Council adopt the budget review statement for the quarter ending 31st of December 2024, and the variations therein be voted. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Best. Councillor Newstead, thank you. I'll hand it over to the Director of Finance and Corporate Services.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is budget review for the 31st of December. It's got a few more adjustments in it than the September one, which was the first quarter. We've got another quarter of information there in which to make assessments, and I was able to see the March quarter reads as well when I was preparing before I finalised this one, to see how we were tracking, particularly in relation to water sales. As the chairman would know, I often have discussions with the chairman about the outlook for our water sales, and see how we go and how we take into account as many factors as we can to try and get some resilience in the number. But it is a very difficult number to estimate. Unlike general purpose council out there, rates income, you can simply, if you know what your rates are going to increase by, you know what your rate base is, you can pretty easily work out, or pretty quickly work out, what your rate income is going to be. More difficult with with water consumption and also non-residential sewer and things like that that are reuser charged, depending on the volumes that you're actually using. So we've made a number of adjustments there. The big one, of course, is water sales. I've actually reduced those water sales by 120,000 kilolitres. I've looked at that and I'm hopeful that we can make the revised estimate, but there's no, you can't give any guarantees of that. As we've said, just now we're going through a sort of cooler period in the month of February, which traditionally, historically, is, you know, a period where the temperatures are reasonably high and the usage is fairly high. We did have a period for a couple of weeks in late January, early February, where we had high temperatures and our demand was very high, so we're selling a lot of water and so on. So I reduced the water sales. Also had a couple of savings, other items there. I increased the investment income because I can see that we're going to exceed our budget on investment income this year, the investment markets, and I'll go a bit more into that with the investment report. But the interest rates have stayed higher for a little bit longer than we expected, and our sum invested, the average amount invested, has probably been a bit higher than what I estimated as well when I did the budget back in the first quarter of last year. So I've put an extra 80,000 income in there, and that would be something that I think would be common amongst most councils. Even some of the constituent councils, you'd be finding that the returns have sort of stayed up a bit higher than what would have been estimated. One of the other things we've been able to, there was an amount of 250,000 in there for reservoir leakage program. We had a company that's working on our reservoirs. They're doing both a leakage program and a resealing program. And that's progressing. We had 250,000 in there for leakage and 250,000 in for the resealing part of the process. The leakage part of the process, we found that it's better than what we thought, so we've been able to save 175,000 from that. So I brought that to account, and I've also increased costs in a few areas for the cost of IT. There's a couple of things there. We've got to, as most people are probably aware, you've got to now look to upgrade to Windows 11, because Windows 10 is actually not going to be discontinued, or not discontinued, but not supported from October this year. So there's a bit of cost in getting all our devices across. Some of our devices are already on Windows 11, so that's okay, but some of our older devices, we're finding with some of the older devices that they can't be updated to Windows 11 because they don't have the memory capacity, so we'll probably have to buy a few more tablets and a few other things there to make sure that we can update. If you don't go to Windows 11, you leave yourself very vulnerable in terms of the support, and also from a security point of view, in terms of any vulnerabilities that are in Windows 10. So I've added 20,000 there, and I've also added 35,000 to our telemetry budget, maintenance budget, because we've had a lot of costs in telemetry, particularly associated with the decommissioning of the Mount Knobloch infrastructure, and also the conversion of the system over to 4G, from 3G to 4G. The costs are quite a bit higher there than expected, so I've increased that as well. There was a couple of other minor things in there to do with a couple of, one was an error that I had in there with postage, and another one was an error there with one electricity account where I overstated. It's purely coincidental that they both netted up to negative 2,000, which was fortuitous for me, but they were basically errors in the estimate there, so that's been adjusted through there as well. On the capital side, there's been a review. The general manager's been working with the project manager and the other operational managers to have a look at the capital program. We've backed some things out of the capital program as discussed there, and they're going to be reassessed in terms of the 2025-26 budget and the long-term financial plan. So they've been reversed back. So that's been brought to account this time as well. But fundamentally, from a cash position, we're still in a reasonable position from a cash point of view. But certainly from an operational point of view, we do have our challenges with our water sales, how that sort of trending. We're hopeful, as I say, of getting to the amended budget, but obviously circumstances can change. The next lot of reads, I think, is in the month of April, so we'd be over the warmest part of the year. So traditionally, that April and January accounts probably constitute 60 or 65% of your or up to that amount of your total income. So it's made it more difficult to estimate, particularly if you're using the first half of the year. But the first half of the year has been very slow, not because so much for the intensity of the rain events, but more so the number of rain events we've had. So people's tanks just get down, and then all of a sudden you have a storm event, it's filled up, then down again, it fills up. You don't get a period where, you know, the sustained demand is sustainably high. So that's a challenge for us, and as I've spoken to the council before, that's something that we sort of have to live with, I suppose. Just unlucky, I suppose. I can say it's unlucky, but 5 years we've had difficult periods since the drought broke in March 2020. We've had pretty challenging times from a sales point of view. In saying that, a lot of water authorities have been in a similar position. So it's a challenge across the sector, I think, in terms of it. But we're hopeful that, you know, when we frame the budget for next time, the long LTFP, we want to give some thought to trying to, as the chairman has said to me, to get some factor or nuance in there for the for allowing for climate change and the weather changes and so on. Not easy. Just means that you don't have a linear relationship. You obviously go to a period and you say, oh, well, we expect that we're going to have a wet year that year. So you bring it down and you actually plan on that basis. How you can do that with a 100% confidence, I don't know. But you try and do your best.
Thanks, Ben. Yes, on that particular issue, the aim really of that sort of work would be to determine the sensitivity, what the sensitivities are. And once you've got that, you can then factor in a whole range of things. You know, there's so, for example, what's the impact of increased temperature? Because we know that is happening, it's going to continue to happen. And that will have an impact on water usage and therefore sales. But, you know, how that is swamped by the rainfall pattern is something that we don't know.
Really, I mean, you've got to push for that availability charge, don't we? Like, it's the most obvious thing is crucial, you know, the correlation between your percentage of availability and what you're actually...
Yeah, you, Mr. Chairman, that's a challenge.
I know it's challenging, but
it's challenging from the point of view that the reason they used to have this 75-25 rule, which was the bane of people's existence, but the reason they had it is it gave people control over their accounts. So they could control the usage and reduce their account and respond. If you put it all up into the fixed, into the access charge, that opportunity to do that is not there to the same extent. And also what you're doing is you're actually increasing it more for the... And I know you don't build a business based on the lowest income people, but it means the impact is on that lower demographic. And there's got to be some... awareness of that and how that flows through, particularly when you're providing an essential service. I think you've got to factor that in to consideration.
It's very much a balancing act, and our mantra really is, and I was looking through all the workshop outcomes from the workshop that I missed, but we're wanting to be a fair and reasonable organisation for our community. Overuse of the excess charge just to keep us, you know, above water, excuse the pun, is not really the right thing to do. We're here for our community, not just as a business.
Yeah, not to say there's not so much opportunity. We have increased the excess charge first in the last couple of years, but it's still less than a dollar a day. So it's not, I suppose you could say, a huge... impost, but it is something that you're sort of conscious of. And I know when it comes to your electricity accounts, I know myself, or gas accounts, they've got this supply charge and it's a fixed charge, and you think to yourself, geez, I'm paying a lot for that, and I'm not paying a huge amount for the consumption, but I'm paying a lot more for the excess charge. I can't really do much about that. So it is a balancing act, and you've got to get a position, explain your position, the reasons why you've done that, and you've basically got to fund the business, and you've got to fund future infrastructure as well, so you can maintain your level of service. So it is a balancing act, yes, Mr. Chair. It is most definitely.
Thank you, Peter. Are there any questions or comments on the QPR?
I've got a couple through you, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Bostwich.
Just looking at the year-to-date figures, I've just got a couple of questions.
Yep.
Page 45.
Yep.
So user fees and charges that we're talking about. So the year-to-date's 2.2 million, or 2.3 really. So if we double that, it's 4.6.
Yep.
So do you think we're going to sell $2 million worth of water, say, in this quarter, in the hottest time, to make
that remembering that's, as I said earlier, Councillor Goswich, most of the income is realised in those last two quarters.
That's what I'm saying.
So you've got to, and it's certainly, the pattern has always been that if you assume you're going to sell 60% of it in the last two quarters, then yes, there is an opportunity to get to the amended figure, I believe. There's a possibility, depending on, obviously, we need a few things to land in our favour, but I think it's possible. And it's not going to be easy, but I don't, if we look at last year's figure, I think it ended up at around 5.6 or something. So certainly in that last route in April, you can up get substantially more. I mean significantly more. So I know looking at that year-to-date figure, and if you prorate it, it doesn't look great.
No, I just want to get the $2 million extra, yeah, like doubling it, yeah, just the four quarters,
yeah,
then another $2 million worth of water sales.
It's possible.
Okay.
It's possible. I'm not saying we're going to get there, but it's certainly something that's we may be able to do it, particularly if we get a bit more warmer weather.
Okay, it's the same as in the expenses with the materials and services.
Yep.
Are we going to buy $2 million worth of stuff in the next 6 months?
Yeah, well, our system doesn't actually take to account committed costs. So you find that when we do a full accrual at the 30th of June, you find that the June costs are always higher. They're substantially higher. So it's possible that that could come through a significant amount there. There may be some savings in there too that I haven't.
Is that the same with the depreciation and amortisation as well? I thought that'd be sort of fairly fixed.
Yeah, that depreciation figure, it should be double that figure, because that's a quarter. It should be half. It should be half. You're right. It should be half.
Blame Mr. Mayor Reynolds for my...
That's fine. But the 3255 depreciation is our best estimate of what we've got.
That's right. That one did look right in my head.
The other one is the wages is probably a little bit over, but that includes a lot of... we've had a number of terminations as well. So they're included in there. So when we do the actual leave accruals, we will have recover some money from provisions, which will take that figure down. So
Your annual charges will go up because of new connections, the annual charges up too.
Well, the annual charges are running at slightly over to 1.98 fractionally. I haven't taken that difference up. It's only a modest difference anyway, but certainly it may come in a little bit over 2 million.
So my last two questions are on page 47. The depot refurbishment.
Yep.
Yeah. There's 370,000 budgeted. Now, I think this has been budgeted for the last 3 or 4 years when I haven't been on CTW, but there's no year-to-date figure.
That's because it's still being...
So nothing's been spent?
Nothing's been spent at this stage. Was some spent on the Canoundra depot, the initial planning, but that was the previous year. But if you look at that figure, there was 200 in the budget, there was 170 brought over. So that money there is basically for the upgrade of the Canoundra depot.
370?
Yes.
Okay, and the next one, just out of interest, what is the Western Artery?
I'll let the General Manager explain that particular project, but it's been ongoing for a while.
Thank you. That's
it's new terminology, I just don't know where it is.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair, the Western Artery project is funded through Safe and Secure for some design work. It runs essentially from the dam, Lake Rollins, right through to Goolagong. Okay. So it's looking at that whole trunk main.
The main trunk.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
So A, B and C trunk mains. Yes.
Cool. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councillor.
Yeah, thank you.
Any further questions or comments? I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Thank you, everybody. We'll move on to the next item, which is 12.4, Financial Matters Investment Report, as at the 31st of January 2025. The recommendation is that the information in relation to cash investments at 31st of January 2025 be noted. Do I have a mover? Mover. Councillor Goswich, seconder. Councillor Nash, thank you. I'll hand it over to the Director of Finance and Corporate Services again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is our investment report. Basically, our level of investment's a bit higher than expected because we, as Councillor Goswich has pointed out, some of those capital projects we haven't undertaken at this stage. The interest rate environment's been dominated by this argument about when are we going to cut, when are we going to cut. And yesterday, which was after I prepared this report, there was a cut of 0.25%. Basically, in response to the lower inflation numbers, inflation's coming down within the RBA target band, so there was a lot of pressure, political and non-political pressure, to bring that down. Financial markets have been also pricing in a number of cuts this year. Some have priced in up to four cuts this year, which, based on the Reserve Bank Governor's statement yesterday, is probably on the optimistic side, I would have thought, based on her comments. But basically, the markets are getting harder. Interest rates, we started to find that we're getting to the reduction part of the cycle. So we're going from our peak and going down. Some of other countries went to a high peak of 5.5%, like in the USA, and they've come off quite a bit quicker. But in the USA, we've now seen inflation starting to pick up once again. So there's a little bit of panic in the US as how that's going to pan out. And I think that's what's driving our Reserve Bank. They don't want to preemptively cut rates and then find that inflation then picks up once again, and they have to possibly move the other way, which would be make it very difficult to achieve what they refer to as a soft landing, which means that you bring your economic growth down to a level that's still positive, but it's, you don't put the economy into recession. But in a practical sense, what we're doing, we might get a deposit that's been earning 5.4%. We might get an offer to roll at 4.7. This is for a 12-month term. So the rates have certainly, the hard edges come off the rates, and that's because the markets are pricing in these future cuts. Mm-hmm. That, in the next couple of weeks, might be reassessed. So we may see some of the reinvestment rates maybe pick up a bit. I'm not really sure. But overall, our investments have performed pretty well in this environment, and it's certainly given us a little bit of extra income, as indicated there in the QBRS report, to play with, and we can use that money to fund our financial operations.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions or comments?
Comment is you've got a bit of work to do next month. We've got about five of them coming to maturity next month. So.
Yes, that will be through you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor Best is right. Yes, we've got a few coming up there. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a test for us.
Be a test.
I've got a question for you.
Yes.
The credit ratings that are there obviously determine, you know, a level of security.
Yes.
For each of those. Have you found any of the poorly rated ones actually don't come through, or are actually, you know, what would happen if there was a problem with that investment?
Well, there's two aspects to that. The Commonwealth Government guarantee of $250,000 per institution is still in place.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if there was a default on those investments, we would claim on that. It would be a pretty significant thing for that to happen. The Australian system is pretty robust, particularly the major banks. But even some of these BBB rated institutions have got pretty strong balance sheets at the moment. They haven't had a large number of defaults, so the risk of that happening is With the tight regulation we have, it's probably very low. So we would hope we'd never ever face a situation where one of our investments actually defaulted. Mm-hmm. Certainly that happened during the CDO era when councils were into derivative instruments back in 2007, 8, 9, 10. When the big Lehman issue happened, that's exactly what happened. There was default on quite a number of the securities. But I think the risk of default is very low. Our policy is pretty robust as well, in that we are allowed to invest more in the high-rated institutions, which we do. I think our investment in the BBB or lower is less than 40%. We do have an unrated one there, which is the Reliance or Unity Bank, and we still support them. They operate a branch in town. But not only that, they do offer pretty reasonable rates as well. They've been very good in terms of our dealings with them, and most of these institutions have been pretty good. We haven't had any issues. If we want to move an investment, bang, they'll get it pretty much to you straight away on the maturity date. So it gives you that opportunity to get in and do an alternative in.
But that works well when the system's working well. But you know, I think we're about to go into a bit of a global meltdown economically, potentially. So I'm just wondering what those outside forces.
3 years. Oh,
you mentioned the global financial crisis of 2008, 2009, and that was not something that any council could have foreseen. And it had an impact. Yeah.
There's a lot happening. Certainly in the geopolitical space, there's a lot of things going on. New president in the United States, and he's introducing a lot of new things in terms of a lot of uncertainty regarding tariffs and what impacts that's going to have on inflation and some of the trading relationships we have. So there is a little bit of uncertain times. I don't know whether I necessarily agree we're going to have a global meltdown, but I think there's going to be a period in the next couple of years where certainly with some of these policies coming out of the US, it's certainly going to change the space. Yeah. As a trading nation, we're pretty strong. Where we are potentially at risk is the impact on someone like China, who is a major trading partner of ours. So if those economic decisions of the US start to impact the Chinese economy significantly, then there will be some sort of throwback. I wouldn't suggest, though, that the financial institutions, any of these institutions we're invested in, or most institutions that are regulated by APRA, the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, with the capital ratios that they're required to keep in them, I don't really think that we're getting to a point where they're at risk at this stage.
They're at risk at all. Mm. Okay. Well, thank you. I've just learned something more. If there are no other comments or questions, I'll put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye, that's carried. Thanks so much for that, Peter. Item 12.5 on page 55, the Audit Risk Improvement Committee. The recommendation there is that council note the ARIC minutes for the meeting held on the 14th of November 2024. The council note the resignation of the independent member of the ARIC committee, Ron Gillard, effective from the 14th of February 2025. The council appoint Stephen Coates as the new independent member on the committee for a 4-year term commencing on the 22nd of May 2025 and ceasing on the 21st of May 2029. That the draft internal audit program for 2024-25 to 27-28 be adopted, and that the draft internal audit program be adopted.
For you, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to change one word in item 5.
Yep.
It should refer to the draft internal audit charter be adopted.
Charter,
great. Yeah. My apologies for that. It should say charter.
Charter.
That's one mistake.
I'm happy to accept that.
No, another one there.
That change. Okay, do I have a mover? Councillor Boskovich, and second?
Happy to.
Councillor Best, thank you very much. I'll pass it over to Director of Finance and Corporate Services yet again.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. This is just an update on what activities have been taking place with the Audit, Risk and Improvement Committee. Apologies for the delay in getting those minutes for the 14th of November. Those minutes should have come to the previous meeting, but they didn't make it. So we put those minutes in there. Basically, I've given a bit of the report outline, some of the things we're looking at, basically wrapping up the financial statements for the year ended 30 June 2024, and the various reports of that. A presentation by Katie Henry from Intenis, who gave an overview of the audit. She subsequently gave a presentation to Council at the December meeting as well in relation to that. The draft fraud and corruption policy, which has subsequently come to Council and been now adopted, was put up to them. There is a draft audit program that we've got there. You're required under the regulations to have an audit program for the next four-year term. The four that we've actually selected at the moment, I've got agreement from the committee, is we want to do a forward risk assessment of our corporate credit card arrangements that we have. Our existing fuel card arrangements is an area that I thought we could look at as well, see if there's any concerns there. And the ARIC committee asked if they could also look at council's expenses. They wanted to look at that area as well and look at forms and documentation and so forth and what's paid. So that's the first one, and hopefully we'll get that underway towards the end of this year. In year two, we're going to review the drinking water management system. Council's engaged Adam Consulting to do a lot of work with council on the drinking water management system, and we've got a lot of work done over the last 12 months. This is just an audit to provide some reassurance to the ARIC committee that critical part of our operations is being done in accordance with the Australian Drinking Water Guidelines. The next one is a review of our record keeping system and see if there's any issues around that. We're currently reviewing our record system with potentially looking at another software system to do that. The general manager has been involved in that, and myself and Michelle. And then item four is a review of the climate change adaptation plans. Basically, it's an opportunity for council to review how its policies overall are dealing with the issue of climate change, how it's been allowed, what matters we've dealt with, what actions we've taken, and how it actually impacts our operations going forward. That plan can change. The audit committee can change that as well, but that's what we're looking at the moment. Basically, looking to do one audit per year, per financial year, and that's our budget is sufficient to cover that as well. The other item is items there that we've mentioned is that the independent member Ron Gillard, who's been on the committee for a number of years, he actually took an offer he couldn't refuse, Mr. Chairman of Wedden Council, as a director of corporate services. So he's resigned to all his ARIC responsibilities. So Ron was on a number of committees as well, so that's had widespread impact across the central New South Wales JO area as well. So I'm working with the JO at the moment to actually do an expression of interest program so we can get a panel of other people to replace Ron and any others and have it in place. But we thank Ron for his contribution in his time here. Wish him very well in his new endeavours. So that created a vacancy on there, and we had looked at in discussions with Central Tablelands Weeds Authority and Blaney Council. We looked at how, and the chair of the ARIC committee, Donna Reigate, we looked at how we're going to fill that casual vacancy, and the ARIC chair, Donna, was of the view that why can't we go back to the previous process we did last year and look at some shortlisted candidates. And one of the shortlisted candidates was Stephen Coates. Stephen was approached by Blaney Shire to ask if he'd be happy to accept a position on the three ARICs. He said he would. So basically we went back and we've gone to the ARIC committee to confirm that they're happy with that process, and they're quite comfortable with it. We had a meeting last Friday, so we decided to put forward to council that Stephen be appointed from the 22nd of May. 22nd of May if anyone's asking, is the date for the next meeting. So he's appointed from the date of the next meeting. That may sort of read a little bit unusual as to why we're waiting till May to appoint him. Why can't we appoint him straight away? Mm-hmm. But that's the reason.
Yeah.
So that's why we've done that. Stephen's got a lot of experience and qualifications, as you've seen from his resume there. He's quite active in the space, so we think he'd be a really good a good opportunity to have him on our shared committee. The other one is the draft internal audit charter. We did have an audit charter that we put up to the audit committee some months ago. They weren't happy with it. The main concern was to sort of clarify the relationship between the internal audit coordinator, which is myself, and the conduct of the audits, and how I need to step back or manage those potential conflicts where I'm part of the actual audit and I'm also the audit coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
The audit coordinator deals mainly with not so much the conduct of the audit, but the management of the audit process, the appointment, the scope, and so on, but doesn't get directly involved. So we were advised by the ARIC to look at the Blaney Council model, because the Blaney Council model had had a lot of development work put on it. So we looked at that and we changed it to suit our circumstances. We put that up to ARIC on Friday and they basically agreed that that was one they were comfortable to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So we're now putting that up to council for adoption if council's happy with that approach. Basically outlines how we're going to run the internal audit function for council, how we propose to run it into the future and so on, and it's there for council's consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Through the chair, I've just got a comment. I did a taxation for councillors thing on the,
yep.
And they did say that they think that you will have to pay super for the ARIC.
Yeah, I can provide council with an update on that from our point of view, as Councillor Nash is well aware of the robust discussions we've had at ARIC about the superannuation issue. It's currently there's a request for a ruling. A ruling was submitted to the ATO. They've come back with some questions which are subsequently being answered, and we hope to have a definitive answer on that by June this year, hopefully. And that'll tell us how far back we have to go or who we have to pay for. I don't accept necessarily that the answer's going to be a yes. It certainly could be, but we do have one person on our ARIC that actually builds through a company structure now.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you pay superannuation in the company?
Yeah.
I accept the premise of what your taxation session would say, that maybe you've got to be a natural person and so on. But it comes down to the control test, and when it comes to the ARIC, we don't certainly have control.
They
determine the dates and they determine when we meet, how we meet, whether it's face-to-face or whether it's...
And all members of the ARIC are effectively contractors, are they?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
they bill, they conduct, you've got an ABN and they actually bill. Two bill as sole traders and one bills as a corporate, as a company.
In which case they should organise their own super.
That would be my interpretation of the situation.
It should be up to, because every time we pay a contractor, do we really have to pay for their superannuation?
It goes down to, under the superannuation guarantee, there's a section there that deals with the labour contract or labour component of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's held, if that's the majority component, then there is an argument that you should pay super on that labour component of the arrangement.
Which probably should be built into the contract fee.
Certainly my understanding from councillors that are currently paying it is that the superannuation is paid in addition to the meeting fee. It's not contrary off the meeting fee. So that's my understanding of how they're doing it. A lot of councils are doing it, but they don't really understand why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just saying, well, that's in the guidelines, so we're doing it, full stop. But I don't know how you do it for a company or if a partnership, if a partner of a partnership is on there and then bills as the partnership. Well, you can't pay super. It's impossible to pay super. That's an independent enterprise that's being conducted. Now, the other issue is that they all charge GST as well. They're registered for GST, so GST is being charged as well. So I'm not sure what the question then arises, should you pay it on the GST inclusive amount of fee or the GST exclusive amount of fee?
It's very
so important. there's a lot of technical issues here.
Yeah.
So that's why I've sort of taken the position that we wait till we get the ruling, and the ATO can tell us exactly. Once they give us the guideline, we might have to back pay some people. If we do, we certainly would, in conjunction with our other, with Blaney and Central Tablelands Weeds Authority, we'd go back and we'd do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's never been an issue of the cost of the fee itself. Right. It's been more around the principle of how it's done.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to get guidance through the rulings at the moment. But the ATO, because of this complexity of some of these issues, it's taking a bit of time as well.
Yeah, I just thought I'd bring that up.
No, that's a fair point. That's a fair point, Councillor Nash. There's a number of people that have got that view,
and I
respect that.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments, Councillor Best?
I just got one, and I'm quite happy to take it on notice, or if I've missed it in the report. But within the area, they've got a section there called Declaration of Unethical Behaviours reported to Council.
Yes.
Yet I can't find anything in their chartering or what they define, or at what point they put something in there of what they consider to be an unethical behaviour of council.
I can respond to that. It was a recommendation out of an audit that we got done on fraud.
Yeah.
And the company that did made a recommendation that everyone that goes to that meeting should make a declaration as to whether they're aware of any ethical issues or unethical behaviour that they're aware of. Now, why they wanted it in there is a lot of people, apparently this comes out of ICAC, that a lot of people say, well, I didn't know about it. So if it's recorded in the minutes that you're aware of it, it's there on the record. At that point in time, you knew about that issue.
Yeah, so where, as a member of the ARIC, where is there a definition of
There's no definition of what's unethical behaviour. It's a matter for each individual to make the... It's a bit like a declaration of interest. It's up to the individual. I can't tell you...
But there's a set of guidelines for declaration of interest. Yeah. Is there any guidelines for what they should be reporting on as unethical behaviour?
Well, there's no definition of unethical behaviour.
It's sort of set up for you not to declare anything, really. Yeah. Who would declare anything? Why open yourself up?
But that's also the issue now, is that the council representative is also an observer and not actually a member of the ARIC.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you don't have to say anything.
You don't have to say a word, yeah.
No, I wouldn't assume. I wouldn't assume that that's always the case, that it's always that situation.
Interesting question.
Sorry, Councillor Best, are you talking about that reference into the charter, or are you talking about in terms of the ARIC?
Well, it's within their committee. Within the committee, they have the section 4, which is unethical. You have to declare this any unethical behaviour. But I mean, where's the definition of what the people in the ARIC have got to therefore declare as unethical behaviour? And then is that going to be now printed in a paper and put up on within our council papers of this is considered to be unethical behaviour? That's all.
There's no definition of unethical behaviour. Yeah. And when the recommendation was made, there was no definition given in the recommendation either.
The problem with ethical behaviour, as with morals in general, is that they change over time.
Mm.
They do change. Mm. There are things which we would consider to be unethical now, which 100 years ago would have been considered normal practice. I think it's very, very hard to
dictate it. If it's something that is fraud or corruption that you're aware of, you would say...
Under current guidelines of what fraud and corruption is.
Correct.
Yeah.
They're defined in the ICAC.
Yeah.
You would say that they would be under
Example. Because I'm getting at just having the guidelines of what's there, because, I mean, you could... potentially someone could just put anything, you know, they could say, well, I believe this to be it, and all of a sudden it's within our papers, it's without the public saying, well, here's something that's been defined as unethical behaviour within the CTW. That's all good. Anyway.
Interesting point.
I just think it's an interesting point, that's all.
Thank you.
Sorry, can I ask a follow-up? Would you like us to do anything about that?
Well, I mean, same thing, this is the ARIC's, this is not ours, this is the ARIC's actual thing. It's more clarity from them of what they expect to be in there.
Yeah, well, it's more to do with not the internal audit charter, it's more to do with the ARIC meeting charter.
It's the ARIC guidelines, I guess, where that should
be. They don't define it in the guidelines, it's not defined in the guidelines. The OLG guidelines don't define it.
So, well, I guess there is an opportunity, isn't there? Here we go. We've got, okay, back to the original motion. Okay, now we're asking for adoption. So this is not going out for for public exhibition or anything like that?
No. For you, Mr. Chairman, the internal audit charter deals with the conduct of internal audits. It doesn't deal with the conduct of the ARIC committee meetings as such. That was put in there at a recommendation arising from an internal audit. That's why it was put in there.
Right. So just after an explanation from the ARIC chair of what the purpose of it is and what the definition around it.
Wasn't the ARIC chair. The ARIC chair, through you, Mr. Chairman, didn't.
I'm not sorry. Yeah.
There was a recommendation arising from the internal audit and it was accepted. It's been accepted. And that's why it's in there.
Oh, okay.
The ARIC chair didn't ask for it to be put in there, or not put in there.
Does your question affect the motion that we're putting?
I don't think so.
Today? Mm-hmm. If it does, just tell me and we'll.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
We're agreeing to their charter, not their procedure.
Well, if everyone's happy with that, I'll put the motion again. Mm-hmm. All in favour?
Aye.
That's carried. Thank you. So we're up to 12.6, which is on page a lot further down.
76.
Indeed. Thank you. And this is an item, disclosures by councillors and designated persons. A recommendation that the disclosures by councillors and designated persons returns. Gosh, I can't even say that. Say that 20 times quickly. Disclosures by councillors and designated persons returns as at the 30th September 2024 as Table B received. Could I have the mover?
And Michelle's got them there, Mr. Chairman. Anyone
wishes to see Councillor Gostwich and Councillor Newstead. Thank you.
Yep.
Again, I'll pass over to Director of Finance and Corporate Services.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, this is just an annual disclosure. It's normally required to be made within 3 months of the election. We didn't have all the returns together by then, so we've got them together now. And we're required to put them up to council, to table them at our council meeting, which we're doing now. The next step after this council meeting is then we're required to put redacted copies on our website. The only reason I put the information access guideline one in there was I would assume that most councils would be aware of that from their constituent councils anyway, but I just wanted to put it up there so they're aware of what the requirements are. So basically the redacted copies, what gets redacted is the signature and the principal residence, and that's basically as per the guideline. Everything else goes on the website as part of just open access disclosure, so anyone can go on the website and do it, and you can go to council's websites and get that. So that's the next step, the redaction of those two things, and then they're actually put on the website. And that completes the process at the moment. I'll just note that if any councillor has a change in their register of interest, they're required to submit that to council when they become aware of that change. and disclose it to the council. So you can do a disclosure of interest return as many times as you like,
mm-hmm.
if your circumstances actually change and you wish to.
That's interesting. So just a quick question on that, Pete. So let's say you've got a couple of fixed term deposits, you go from one institution to another, do you have to physically go and change that you've got with another bank now, or is it just...
I guess it's, you're asking what level of detail, how granular do you, does this need to be? I've listed a number of things.
It's an interesting question. I wouldn't have thought... It comes down to whether the only time it would become an issue is if maybe if the institution which you've put those investments into had a water account with council, and it, for some reason it came to council for a deliberation or a decision.
Or more likely to borrow money from that council or that institution.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly, but then you got to consider the impact.
Too much money?
I wouldn't. It's probably down to the individual. If you feel comfortable doing that, we'd be happy to accept it. But it's basically up to the individual whether there's been a material change in your interest, whether you consider that a material change. It's probably not. It's probably not. It's a good question, though.
If
you change property or bought property or something like that, that should be disclosed. If you bought heap of shares in a public company, 100,000 shares in Telstra, and then we bought the Telstra contract to council, you'd probably, I'm not saying you'd have to excuse yourself, but you'd probably declare that as... but it's probably not significant. It's basically, and you notice sometimes it happens at state and federal government level where something's brought to attention, generally in relation to travel claims, where someone's accepted free travel or something, and they go in and change their register of interest to disclose that, and they're playing a bit of catch up. So that's what you're comfortable in, but.
Yeah.
The guidelines, and I've had this discussion with the chairman also, is how granular I have to, how much detail I have to get in, and it's really not specified in the guidelines particularly.
Yeah.
So it's what the individual is comfortable with doing, or if the reasonable person looking at that declaration is fully aware of all the circumstances, and it wouldn't be something that it may not be there, that possibly could be something that could influence the decision making by that person.
And it's better to disclose rather than not to disclose.
Yes. I believe so, yeah. Yes. So I believe that's the best way to do it.
Yes. I've got shares, like a lot of people have got shares, and a portfolio that was sort of put together years ago, and I noticed in amongst all of that that there's shares in Newmont or Cadia, which comes under, it's within our region.
Yes.
So I've declared it. To say that, I do have these shares. Well, not many. I don't own half of them. I'm checking. No, it's what I own. It's better to disclose than not to disclose is really the point.
I own some shares too. I actually list one out. I don't list how many, but I list the institutions out.
Indeed.
Some people say I've got public shareholdings
and
just leave it at that. That's what the individual is.
Thank you for that. Good question. Thank you, Peter, for that. If there are no more comments or questions, we're tabling those documents there. There they are. And I'll put that all in favour. That's carried. Thank you. Item 12.7, I think we're up to, maintenance of council systems. The recommendation there is the council note the information in the general report. Does anyone want to speak on that? Do you want to speak on that? Mover.
Yeah.
Councillor Nash, Councillor Newstead. Thank you.
Did you want to speak to that?
Yes, if I may, Mr. Chair. I would like to highlight item E in the report, which is about the drinking water quality. You'll see that there's a... We did have a slight issue down at Quandiella. Do weekly tests down there on the reticulation sampling. At that weekly test, it was identified the reticulation-free chlorine limit was low. So the investigation, they found that there was an issue with the dosing system. They rectified that. New South Wales Health were advised. They appreciated that we advised them. The process that we went through was to essentially just dose the tank on the other with chlorine and do a flushing process. So we didn't get to a zero in the free chlorine, but it was low. And just to highlight that the staff did an exceptional job working long hours to make sure that it was right. So credit to the staff in that respect. I think they were there till about 9:30 at night or something, trying to get it right. But we were fortunate there was no instance where we were required to do any other form of notifications or alerts or anything. So just to highlight that, and I'll take other questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair, do you have a system where you alert straight away about that, or yeah. It's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
Yes, thanks. Through you, Mr. Chair. We don't have an online monitoring system on that site at this point in time, so we don't get alerts immediately. We do, however, have highlighted that as being one of the things we're going to work. We are working through. So there's some instrumentation that's being installed, has been installed, partly installed, and we're working through getting that commissioned so that we can bring that online and get the online monitoring.
That's great. Yeah, we need to do that, don't
we? So would the customers have tasted the difference in the water?
No.
I've got one question. It's probably more of a, I never understand this with a business paper. It's like that cost extra costs, the telemetry cost extra costs, but we have budget implications nil. I never understand how that's budget implications are nil, because these are costs we didn't expect to have. So should that be a budgetary?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to take that question. The answer to that would be generally those things would be done through the operational plan for 24-25.
But we didn't plan for it though, did they?
Well, they'd be part of your overall operational cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all right. Now, as well, when you say that nil and you sort of, you're talking about spending money, you sort of go, that's fine, that's
I had the same question when I first came on the council in Cabong. Exactly the same question. We're talking about potential, you know, costs involved, and then there's a nil thing sitting there. But if it's incorporated within the normal operational budget, then there are no implications. It's there. You're going to expect there's going to be breakages, or at least all these going to occur occasionally. Yeah, and you've budgeted for that. Yeah.
Mm. So.
Thank you. Yep. Only
good one. Yes, Councillor Bates.
Just a couple of comments. Just the same thing. I'd just like to thank the staff, especially the work on the telemetry as well. They had only a couple of days. They got that all back up and running, and got all the tanks filled back up again. That was pretty good work from the staff. The same as Quandiella. It's really some really good work, and I think that should be passed on to the staff. So.
Yeah, I agree. I concur. Thank you.
It's a pretty big break.
Any more questions, comments? No? Well, I'll put that all in favour.
Aye.
Aye, it's carried. Thank you. Move on to item 12.8, performance of council systems. The recommendation there is the council note the information in the report. I move out. Councillor Boswich and Councillor Pallett.
Thank you.
General Manager, would you like to have highlight anything there, or are there any questions, comments?
I've just put the report as
this is.
Yep. And if there's any questions,
are there any questions?
Not a question, I suppose. Just a bit of a comment on we've been doing consultations in our area in Quandiella's come up. We were out there, and they don't actually have a low pressure within their system. We don't actually have a metric for it. but I've had a few complaints out there of quite low pressure, and I did have a look at some of them, and they were quite low. So I don't know whether it's actually just come through the system or not, or something like that. But yeah, the pool is one of them, that the water will barely run a sprinkler. So, yeah, but it might be their own system too, might be that, but in the park thing, so. But I notice, you know, the other ones have all got low pressure complaints, but Corndale itself has no area for low pressure complaints.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I can take that one on.
That's all right. Thank you.
Well, then, probably should.
Through you, Mr. Chair, did they actually report that to us?
No, well, I'm not sure. Like I said, I think it had been, but
okay.
I just thought I'd just bring it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick one, just on the main brakes. I noticed in Isley Street, Carcor, there was two there within 5 days of each other. Were they the same place? Through you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my understanding is that they're replacing a segment of the pipe in Carcor, and prior to doing the cutover, there was two breaks within the old component that they're looking to replace. So it was within the same proximity and a few days apart.
So did they have further questions or comments? I will put that. All in favour?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It's carried. Okay, questions on notice? Item 13. No questions on notice. We move into confidential matters. So if we could turn the recording off into normal council. And I will need to read out, I assume, this lengthy recommendation. This is for... Okay. In confidential session, we discussed the electricity procurement. There was a recommendation that council note the report on electricity procurement for small market sites. Participates in the regional procurement process facilitated by Central West New South Wales Joint Organisation for the supply of electricity for small market sites. Thirdly, note the extreme volatility of the energy market currently being experienced. Four, agree to purchase 50% of renewable energy for each site. Five, note the short time frame for acceptance of offers for the supply of electricity. Six, resolve that because of the extenuating circumstances set out in the report, a satisfactory result would not be achieved by inviting tenders for the aggregated procurement of electricity for small market sites which are due to commence on 1st of July 2025. Seven, note that the reasons for the decision of the Council in Resolution 6 are as follows. A, the services with respect to which the tender relates can only be provided by energy retailers. B, Council has received expert advice that due to the nature of the relevant market, offers from those retailers which will be made in response to the request for tender will only be open for acceptance for a period of 1 to 2 weeks. C, even if the tender period was shortened to 7 days as permitted under the regulations, some, if not all, of the relevant tenders would expire prior to Council being able to undertake an assessment of tenders. Report the matter to Council and resolve to accept or reject any tenders. D, this would result in Council either having no valid tenders which it is able to accept, or it would not be able to consider for acceptance all of the tenders lodged in response to the request for tender. And E, this would not be a satisfactory result for Council. Eight, delegate the determination, acceptance or rejection of proposals on behalf of Council to the General Manager. Nine, delegate the execution of the contract for the supply of electricity for small sites to the General Manager. 10, receive a report on conclusion of the process detailing the outcome. And 11, advise Central New South Wales Joint Organisation of its decisions. Very lengthy recommendation. That was moved and agreed to by the Council.
Yeah.
So I just record that for general meeting. Okay, let's deal with confidential matters. Going back to our contents, we have any late reports?
There are no late reports.
No late reports, thank you. Just in concluding the meeting, just to remind everybody, we've got a budget review meeting on the 26th of March. It should be in your diaries already, and that's going to be in Canada. So, budget review meeting, 26th of March in Canada. And if there are no further comments or questions, I'll close the meeting.
I think Daryl saw it.
Daryl saw it.
Where's that? Which?
The budget.
The budget meeting.
It's traditionally held in Canoundra, but I thought the general manager wanted it moved to the Darrell Sliger Centre on the 26th of March.
We had a discussion about this.
I
don't mind where it is.
I don't either.
We'll take advice from the councillors as to where they'd like to hold it. The original report referenced Canoundra. This facility provides a little bit more potentially comfort, but also we've got TV screens and whiteboards and stuff here that we can scribble on should we need to.
But it means it's a further distance for the Wheaton councillors to get to come.
Where are you at, Paul?
It's
a 9:30 start. Is that an early start or earlier start?
Got to get drivers anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. You don't mind?
No, I've got to have a driver anyway for the day, so you might as well just come earlier.
You're fine with that, Jan?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, we'll change that now to
Blaney.
To Blaney.
Yeah, I know.
I got leads from the council. Send me the upcoming dates.
Jeez.
And I declare the meeting closed at 12:16 p.m. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Noting that.